Is the soul held in breath? When breathing ceases, life does as well. Yours truly. Man's time here is finite, but the influence of a man is infinite. The question is, what shall we do with the daylight that remains? All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Here we go again. I appreciate you showing up. Today, I'm doing a brief overview of the book Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art, written by James Nestor. James Nestor is an author and journalist who has written for Outside Magazine, The Atlantic, National Public Radio, The New York Times, Scientific American, Dwell Magazine, The San Francisco Chronicle, and more. His latest book, Breath, explores how the human species has lost the ability to breathe properly over the past several hundred thousand years and is now suffering from a laundry list of maladies, including things like snoring, sleep apnea, asthma, autoimmune diseases, and more because of their breathing techniques. Nestor travels the world to figure out what went wrong and how to fix it. The answers aren't found in pulmonology labs, as we might expect, but in the muddy digs of ancient burial sites, secret Soviet facilities, New Jersey choir schools, and the smoggy streets of Sao Paulo. So, just briefly, my own thoughts on the book. I thought it was a fun read. Of course, it's a bit sciencey, which I love, like biology, pathophysiology, anatomy, etc. It included a bit of that, talked about a variety of studies that show how breath work can change your anatomy, changes your pH of your body, changes your heart rate, your blood pressure, all kinds of amazing things that breath can do. One thing, though, is, you know, he brings up a lot of sort of old science, or some of these were done by things, people who are not even scientists at all. And so you got to wonder, like, how valid are these arguments or statements, right? Some of these people apparently had miraculous cures for things like emphysema and other autoimmune diseases and things. But then when they kind of passed on, their work just was left behind. Nobody else latched on. And so it makes you wonder, like, was it really that effective or not? Maybe it's a little bit of woo science. I don't know. Other things that he mentions in the book are very substantiated things from Stanford University and things like that. So, you know, I found myself questioning a few of these things, but at the same time, I think it's thought-provoking, intriguing. I mean, breath is one of the most essential things to life. In fact, I have a book here called How We Die. And basically, there's one way you die, and that is a lack of oxygen to the brain, right? And so if you don't get enough oxygen to your brain, you die. And so our breath is clearly important and significant. So it was an interesting book. I quickly want to mention to you guys, if you have not tried Magic Mind yet, you need to go get it. I have the link in the show notes. So go down there, go to magicmind.co/thelifeyouwant and use the promo code The Life You Want 2020 and get yourself a discount for a limited time on Magic Mind. This little bottle, it's a 2-ounce fluid shot, has been so amazing for me. Literally just last Thursday, I was in that mode of like, I'm ready for the weekend. I'm done. I need to check out. I want some R&R. But I had a laundry list of things that I needed to get done for the podcast here and other things in my life. And so I took this little shot of Magic Mind and literally I was in the zone. I had one of the most effective days. I just knocked out everything I needed to be done. I wasn't even going to go stop for lunch until my wife needed my help. And I was like, well, okay, I can quit for a while. I've got literally everything I need to get done is done. And Magic Mind just seems to help you sort of get in that focus zone without feeling jittery from caffeine or, you know, the ups and downs that some people get when they drink their coffee and then they get a crash and they drink another coffee. Magic Mind helps you level that out and prolong the effects of caffeine. You can take it alongside your coffee. You can take it independently. And it's just a very effective little 2-ounce fluid shot with healthy ingredients. I could not be more pumped about it. So head over to magicmind.co/thelifeyouwant and use that promo code in the link. Grab yourself some Magic Mind at a discount. All right, guys, let's jump into the book here. I'll give you some of my highlights and things that I found interesting, try and give you a flavor of what this book is like should you choose to purchase it. He starts out with his own story, basically. He says that he was like so many people today, stressed out and living in more of an anxious state than desirable, right? And so he took a breathing course that I believe was offered to him for free. And so he went, why not? And this put him onto the world of breath work and the many amazing things that different types of breathing can do for the body. Later, he's with a group of free divers. He started free diving himself, and he was told that there are as many ways to breathe as there are foods to eat from these divers. They told him wild stories about breathing, like one person who lost 70 pounds just by changing the way he breathes, or that you can expand your lung capacity by as much as 30% with certain breathing techniques, fight illnesses and cancer, or increase your body's temperature entirely through breathing techniques. So these are kind of wild claims that, you know, most of us have not heard of, or we haven't heard in mainstream science as truth. So that kind of, again, puts him on another level of, can I find the truth of these things? Is there science that substantiates many of these claims? So slowly over time, James managed to corroborate many of the claims these deep divers had made. Scientists all over the world have been rediscovering the lost art of breath work from various cultures, conducting studies and validating several health benefits. He goes way back and discusses in some detail how our species evolved over time. Our noses and nasal cavity, mouth and throat structures have all changed along with our lifestyles. Some of it later in the book, talking about the type of food we eat and the way we chew, that chewing has a lot to do with our jaw strength, the actual amount of bone in our faces, the curvatures of our dental arches, the strength and health of our teeth, and then, of course, since this is a breath book, the way that affects our nasal cavity and the ability to effectively breathe through the nasal cavity. So he bounces in and out of this study throughout the book that he did on himself with some Stanford professors. So he goes down to Stanford along with a friend of his named Olson, and they're going to do an experiment where they're going to completely occlude their nostrils for 10 days and take, you know, labs and studies on their bodies, and then they'll pull those out and go back to nose breathing and see how their body changes within just those 10 days of closed nostrils and mouth breathing alone, and then 10 days on the other side. So they shove earplugs in their nose and tape them on there so that they cannot breathe through their nose at all. Some of the immediate sleep problems are pretty wild. They both experience sleep apnea, increased heart rate, blood pressure goes up 13%. Their quality of sleep is terrible. Their mental acuity is bad. They have these general feelings of lousiness. They're just a lot of negative effects from this mouth breathing and completely closed off nostrils. In this study, they do a variety of things. So one of them is like a cycling experiment where they actually go jump on a exercise bike, and it's a obviously mapped out test where they're going to increase the intensity and all these things and test their heart rate and blood pressure and things. And this had been done by an old cycling coach years ago. And so when they were doing mouth breathing, the cyclists, as did James and Olson, feel more out of breath and were having a hard time keeping up. They were not rejuvenated by the exercise. They felt sort of depleted from it. Whereas the nose breathers lasted far longer. Their heart rate stayed lower. They felt more rejuvenated or exhilaration from the exercise itself. And the cycling coach and his team went on to perform very well in their field. Anyway, between the two different studies, James and Olson versus these old-time cyclists basically went on to prove, at least in this sample size, that the nose breathing is far more effective at getting your body enough oxygen to perform it at new heights. So I've heard James mention on podcasts that there are about 30 functions of the nasal cavity. And, you know, I wouldn't have thought of that on my own. I basically think, oh, breathing, filtering air, moistening air, temperature of air, which are some that we all are aware of, but there are, you know, that's like four. So he goes on to explain some of these things within the book. When you take a breath through the nose, it heats the air to the proper temperature for your lungs, right? It filters all kinds of pathogens, among other things, and your lungs can actually absorb about 20% more oxygen than from mouth breathing. So again, you know, going back to that cycling experiment, it's like, if that's true, if you get 20% more oxygen from nose breathing than mouth breathing, just because of the moisture, the heat, the pathogens, et cetera, it's like, well, clearly you're going to perform better, but what about non-athletes, right? It's like, what about on your daily life? What if you're just sitting at your computer sending out emails, but how does your breath still affect you? After only 10 days of living with the nose plugs, James' sleep apnea was out of control. His breathing is getting worse. His blood oxygen levels are getting worse every day. The mouth breathing causes the body to lose about 40% more water during the night, making you thirsty in the night. So if you're one of those people that sleeps with a cup of water next to the bed and wakes up drinking water, that may be a signal to you that you might want to tape your mouth shut and practice nose breathing at night. It turns out that the soft tissue in your nostrils actually have cycles. He talks about the nostril cycles. So one will swell up while the other one remains open. And then after about 4 hours, they'll switch. And apparently there are some noticeable effects on the body of breathing through the right nostril versus the left nostril. One of his examples of this is that the right nostril is more like the gas pedal, the left more like the brakes, meaning that when you breathe through your right nostril, it signals to the body to increase heart rate and a few other things, versus the left is more like the calm down, slow the heart rate, chill out. And that these nostril cycles may be in association with like lunar cycles or maybe your circadian rhythm or something. One thing to think about though is that, you know, your body has these cascading events. We talk about this a lot in the healthcare world. So when we change one thing about our life or lifestyle, whether that's positive or negative, it has this sequence of events that also impact many other factors. But to keep this on more of a simple level and a typical person, right? If you get poor sleep, that is going to cause you to maybe sleep in longer, which kind of jacks up your circadian rhythm. You might not get as much sunlight that morning. You might not exercise as well. You might get tired earlier in your exercise or feel less invigorated by your exercise. You may eat more carbohydrates because that's what happens when you get poor sleep and you're depleted of energy. Your decision-making gets worse, right? Which all comes back to you might get poor quality sleep the next night. So there's this cascade of events that take place in the body. So what if breathing through your right nostril has all these interesting and complex impacts on the body, and then also the left nostril? He talks about the soft tissue that is swelling and engorging with blood and things like that, that it's the same tissue as other parts of the body, sexual organs and things. And so there's some really intriguing ideas out there about this that he kind of brings up. He eventually gets through the 10 days of his nose plug. He removes those plugs from his nose. He can hardly breathe through his nose after that for quite some time, but he's, you know, of course, trying to now breathe through his nose intentionally. And so eventually his nose clears up, he starts feeling better. But within just basically 24 hours, his heart rate comes down significantly. His heart rate variability during sleep is much improved. His blood pressure had improved. He said his systolic blood pressure had dropped from the 140s to the 120s in just that day, which I found astounding. So he's talking about, you know, taking deep breaths through the nose and breathing effectively through the nose and a lot of oxygenation and things. And just as you're starting to think that it's all about more breath through the nose, he takes a left-hand turn and basically says that maybe breathing less is one of the keys, and that carbon dioxide is equally, if not more important than oxygen to the body. So he discusses a few people who come from different backgrounds that were able to use some unconventional therapies to treat people with emphysema, asthma, and even train Olympic gold medalists. So these breathing techniques seem to work for kind of everybody, and they were able to help or cure some of these illnesses that doctors just say are incurable but manageable through medication. And so the emphysema thing was one that was very interesting to me. And as a nurse, I'm really curious to know if that truly works. Because emphysema, if you look it up, is a lung condition that causes shortness of breath. In people with emphysema, their air sacs in their lungs, or the alveoli, are damaged. And over time, the inner walls of their air sacs weaken and rupture, so creating larger air space instead of many small ones, right? So I had to wonder about that. I'm curious. This gentleman that he's talking about in the book focuses on these kind of different muscles around the respiratory system, and he has them doing these exercises. He's pushing on parts of their body or shaking them or massaging them and trying to get them to change their posture and basically helping them to push more air out of their lungs, which is, you know, if you're familiar with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, emphysema could fit under that category, along with chronic bronchitis, where people are not getting enough air out of their lungs, so each breath is smaller and less effective. And so apparently this person was able to help these people make dramatic improvements with their emphysema diagnoses and live a more normal life. So with the carbon dioxide thing, he says, when we breathe too much, we expel too much CO2 and our blood pH becomes more alkaline. When we breathe slower, the blood pH becomes more acidic, which is a topic you've probably heard of if you've gone down that rabbit hole of holistic healing for a variety of things, that our bodies become too alkaline and we need them to be more acidic or vice versa. Well, apparently it's possible to overbreathe yourself into things like osteoporosis, because when bicarbonate leaves the body, it takes magnesium and phosphorus and other minerals with it. And you're, in a sense, depleting your body of essential minerals and nutrients. And so, again, if that's true, maybe your breathing has something to do with keeping strong bones and strong muscles and not losing so much muscle and bone mass as you age. Slow-paced breathing has been used to address a variety of chronic stress, inflammation, and congestion issues. He says that mammals with the lowest resting heart rates live the longest, and the way to lower your heart rate is through slowed breathing, which I did while reading this book, and I've done this before, but go ahead and do it right now. If you want to check your pulse, I have a watch that has my heart rate on it. Basically, take a big, quick breath in. I once had a singing coach tell me it's almost like when you hit cold water, you just go a very quick breath. I've also heard Andrew Huberman talk about this. Take two rapid breaths through your nose, one right after the other. So just go and then slowly let that air out. So your breath in is quick, your breath out is slow, and it's the inhaling increases your heart rate, exhaling decreases your heart rate. So you just take those deep breaths real quick and kind of semi-hold your breath or just let it out very slowly. Do that a few times and you can watch your heart rate drop 6 or 8 beats per minute in a matter of seconds. So you can definitely at least verify that part of it, that slower, deeper breaths will lower your heart rate. That's definitely true. As I mentioned earlier, he does talk about the structure of the face, and as he gets towards the middle of the book, he goes on this long search to figure out, have skeletons changed? And he goes and finds old skeletons from times past, many of which are in France or burial sites in Europe, to see if the teeth and jaws and facial structures had changed over time. And he does verify that for himself, that our shapes and health of teeth and straightness of teeth and all those things have changed. And maybe that's in association with the toughness of our food. So these ancient people probably spent a lot of their time chewing more, you know, harder food, whether it's raw or cooked meat or vegetables or roots that are just right out of the ground, things that are more in their organic form, chewing harder foods and eating things maybe closer to like cartilage and ligaments of meat. Whereas in modern society, we just have tons of ready-made carbs, highly engineered food to be very soft and fluffy and edible and the ideal texture for our preferences. And we only eat the most tasty and easy to eat parts of an animal, things like that. So maybe our diets have contributed to the changing facial structure and the lack of strong bone in our faces and jaws and weakening teeth. Think of how many smoothies we eat, and nobody in history ever had smoothies until blenders were a thing, right? On the topic of jaws, James explores the work of a variety of doctors, dentists, and scientists that show how mouth expansion, proper posture, and hard chewing can actually add a significant amount of bone and soft tissue to the face, which then again improve your breathing and overall health. So again, that sort of full circle. You focus on breathing, and then your facial structures change, which help you breathe better. He brings up somebody that's an interesting fellow today. His name's Wim Hof. I've seen him on a variety of podcasts and on social media and things. So if you're not familiar with Wim Hof, H-O-F, his wife committed suicide at like middle age, like far too young to die. And, you know, mental health is a plague in our generation. And he kind of went on a journey trying to figure out like what things could improve mental health and help people live long and well and happy. And he came across some of these practices of old Buddhists and different people, and has worked on his breathing techniques and meditation and all this stuff. Okay. So you'll see him do these cold plunges and wild things. And he actually has set a couple of world records for things like sitting in an ice bath for hours and showing no signs of hypothermia, or running a marathon or something in the snow, like in shorts. Like the guy just does these wild things because his breathing can help him maintain a higher body temperature, which is an old, old breathing technique from the Buddhists called Tummo. So he came across Tummo breathing and has worked on that. Apparently, Tummo breathing activates your autonomic nervous system. So Hof says it has been shown to help with depression, anxiety, mood, mental focus, and pain management. The goal of the Wim Hof method breathing technique is to teach you to develop mastery over your nervous, immune, and cardiovascular systems to help you be happier, stronger, and healthier. So, intriguing work. I mean, the fact that he's done these world records and continues to do these wild things, controlling his body temperature in freezing conditions and basically no clothing, is pretty wild. He discusses additional studies, some of which are modern, such as using carbon dioxide treatments to cure anxiety, epilepsy, or schizophrenia, even autoimmune diseases like arthritis, eczema, and psoriasis. So there's a lot of work going on right now. A lot of this is actually happening at Stanford, which was convenient for him because he's there. And one of our future episodes, I've got a book sitting here on my desk called Jaws, The Story of a Hidden Pandemic. And this is written by scientists from the University of California, as well as Stanford University. And basically their studies on how jaws have changed just with breathing, like nose breathing. And that's precisely why Andrew Huberman mentions that sort of stuff about taping your mouth shut when you're sleeping, because it has all kinds of effects on like the shape of your chin and jaw and throat and nasal cavity. They have pictures in that book of young girls who kind of have like a receded looking jaw. Their teeth are jacked up. They have sleep apnea like crazy. At a young age, they cover up their mouth and have them start breathing through their nose, and their face structure completely changes, and they become this healthy looking, you know, sharp jawline, and healthy skin and breathing better. It's just, it's quite wild. As he's wrapping up the book, he tells some more of his own personal experiences, people he's worked with, an expander he got that sort of expanded his jaws or teeth and helped with all kinds of things. Very, very intriguing. After the epilogue, he has a list of breathing techniques. It's actually called Breathing Methods is the section, and they include alternate nostril breathing, breathing coordination, buteyko breathing techniques, the conscious breathing anchor, decongest the nose, yogic breathing, box breathing, conscious breathing, carbon dioxide training, and 4-7-8 breathing. So that's the book in a nutshell. I hope it gives you kind of an idea of what you might get if you read this book. I do recommend this one. I mean, this is it was a fun read. I truly think breathing, we know for a fact that effective breathing changes all kinds of things in your body. We know that it can change your heart rate, which is some pretty simple evidence that it's affecting your nervous system. Obviously, the air we breathe is one of the basic needs of the body, and so it's probably worth taking a look at and doing some experimentation, understanding whether you're a mouth breather or a nose breather. It sounds like the percentages are through the roof. It's like 60% of people breathe through their mouth at night, and we wonder why people are snoring and have sleep apnea and their sleep quality is bad and all these things. Well, it sounds like nose breathing is an effective way to cure some of those things and give yourself a better night's sleep on a regular basis, which if you've listened to any of my former podcasts, I basically say that sleep and exercise are the two most important things you can do in your life. And so if breathing's going to help your sleep quality, then it's probably worth your time. So if you want this book, as always, the link is in the show notes. When you purchase from that link, I'll get a small cut from the sale of that book, and I appreciate that. I appreciate you guys listening, and I will catch you on the next one. Adios. Hey, thanks for listening to the entire episode. As a token of gratitude, I want to give you a discount on my book, Ingrained. Head over to bronsonwilks.com/store and download Ingrained for less than $1 with the coupon code GOALS, G-O-A-L-S.